Today we are tackling the ultimate investing cheat sheet.
Great. The holy grail of financial advice.
Exactly. A document that promises to save your portfolio from absolute ruin. Like the definitive guide to sidestepping those financial landmines that wipe out fortunes.
Yep. The ones everyone warns you about.
But there is one massive catch here. The author kind of forgot to actually write it.
Minor detail, right?
It's the tiny oversight. So, welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is literally an exploration of the void.
It really is.
Because you, the listener, have handed us what has to be a uniquely minimalist piece of source material. I mean, we usually come to the table with stacks of articles, right? Dense research papers or sprawling historical narratives to synthesize.
Oh, usually I'm buried in charts and data tables before we start.
Same. But today, we're analyzing a document that consists entirely of 12 words.
12 words and a colon, right?
12 words, a colon, and, well, a massive implication.
It really is the shortest document we have ever analyzed. And yet, what's fascinating is that the structure of what is missing creates the surprisingly complex cognitive puzzle.
It totally does. So I'm going to read the entirety of the source document you provided to us right now. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
Here it is, verbatim. Excerpts from The Biggest Investing Mistakes to Avoid. The Biggest Investing Mistakes to Avoid.
And that's it.
That is it. That is the entire document. I mean, my initial reaction was just to flag this as a printing error or a broken link.
Which would be the logical assumption.
Right. We have a title, a colon, indicating that the promised excerpts will follow, and then just a literal repetition of the title. It is a loop, like a typographical snake eating its own tail.
A very frustrating snake.
Exactly. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because if we look past the obvious assumption that someone simply failed to, you know, copy and paste the body text, the document forces us into a very strange interaction with our own expectations.
It really does. I mean, we have to treat the text as it exists right now, not as we assume it was intended to exist.
Right. Take it at face value.
Exactly. By presenting a promise and immediately withholding the fulfillment of that promise, the document becomes this stark exercise in ambiguity aversion.
Ambiguity aversion. Say more about that.
Well, the human brain, particularly when you're navigating high-stakes environments like investing, it just craves completed patterns.
Oh, for sure. We hate loose ends.
Exactly. We want the list. We want the boundaries defined for us. When the text explicitly promises excerpts and then delivers only a repetition of the premise, it forces the reader to confront their reliance on external authority.
That makes so much sense. So instead of a roadmap, you get a mirror.
That's a great way to put it.
And the text basically says, here are the things you absolutely shouldn't do, and then it just falls silent. It puts the burden entirely back on you, the reader.
It abandons you in the dark.
It really does. It's like walking onto a pitch black stage without a script. Let's look at the specific architecture of that opening phrase, though. Excerpts from.
Uh-huh.
The word excerpts inherently implies curation, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It suggests that there is this vast, overwhelming body of work detailing countless mistakes out there. And some benevolent editor has gone into the archives, sifted through all the noise, and pulled out only the most critical data points for your convenience.
Right. It promises efficiency above all else.
Yeah.
It signals to the reader that the heavy lifting of analysis has already been done for them. And in our modern attention economy, the promise of an excerpt or a summary is a highly effective hook.
Oh, we all click on the summaries. Nobody wants to read the full white paper.
Exactly. It caters to the cognitive fatigue of the investor who knows they need to be informed, right? But they just lack the temporal bandwidth to read the primary source material.
They just want the bullet points so they can get back to their day.
Precisely. However, the paradox here is that the curation results in zero data. The efficiency has been optimized to the point of complete erasure.
Optimized to erasure. Wow. I want to test that idea of efficiency, actually, because I want to push back on the notion that this is purely a failure of the text.
Okay, I'm listening.
Could we argue that the literal biggest investing mistake is acting blindly when you have no actual data or information to go on? Just a flashy title.
Oh, that is an interesting angle.
Right. By providing nothing but the headline, the document perfectly simulates the environment in which the vast majority of catastrophic financial decisions are made today.
You are basically describing the mechanics of tidal surfing.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a very valid interpretation of the document's function, even if it wasn't the author's intent.
Because it's what we all do.
We do. We operate in an information ecosystem where the velocity of news often completely outpaces our capacity to process it.
You can't possibly read everything on your feed.
You can't. Consequently, making decisions based purely on headlines, buzzwords, or the mere promise of knowledge, it becomes a survival mechanism, albeit a deeply flawed one.
A huge flaw.
Right. When an investor acts on a headline without interrogating the underlying data, they're operating on the illusion of information.
They're just projecting their own assumptions onto the surface.
Precisely.
Like, if I read a headline that aligns with my existing market biases, I don't necessarily need to read the article to feel validated. I scan the title, my brain registers a dopamine hit of confirmation, and I just move on.
Completely confident in a thesis you haven't actually verified.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to trade based on a headline I skimmed while waiting for my coffee. And the source document you provided to us today forces a confrontation with that exact habit.
Because there is nothing else to skim.
Right. If you were to make a portfolio adjustment based solely on this document, you would be acting purely on emotion and presumption because there are zero fundamental metrics provided.
Zero. Let's take that a step further, actually.
Please do.
The document doesn't just invite that kind of projection. It practically mandates it.
Mandates it how?
Well, when faced with an epistemological void, a space where knowledge is promised but totally absent, the mind does not simply shut down and wait.
Oh, no. It panics.
It fills the vacuum with its own anxieties. There's this psychological principle called the Zeigarnik effect.
Oh, I've heard of this. Remind me how it works.
It demonstrates that people remember uncompleted or interrupted tasks much better than completed ones.
Ah, right. Like when you can't remember the end of a song and it just loops in your head all day.
Exactly. By leaving the promise of the title unfulfilled, the document creates an open loop in the investor's mind. The anxiety of the unknown mistake lingers far longer than the relief of a solved problem would have.
It creates a state of perpetual suspense. You know the threat exists because the title literally assures you it does, but you are denied the coordinates of the threat.
You're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Which perfectly brings us to the actual vocabulary used in this 12-word loop.
Right, the specific wording.
Because the transition from the format of the text, the emptiness of it, to the specific semantic choices is crucial here. The source frames its entire subject around mistakes to avoid.
What's fascinating here is that the framing is entirely prescriptive rather than prescriptive.
Tell me more about that distinction.
Well, it does not offer a thesis on how to generate yield or how to identify value or how to construct a resilient portfolio. It doesn't tell you what to do.
Right. It focuses exclusively on the negative space, on what not to do.
Exactly. The literature of finance is heavily saturated with this specific type of negative framing, and it leverages a very specific neurological pathway.
We're talking about loss aversion here, right?
We are. Yeah. We don't need to retread the basic textbook definitions of loss aversion, but we do need to look at how this specific document weaponizes it. Because the basic premise is that the psychological impact of losing capital is significantly more intense than the satisfaction of gaining that exact same amount of capital.
Right. Losing $1,000 hurts way more than making $1,000 feels good. So, to capture an investor's attention in a crowded media landscape, you don't sell them the dream of wealth. You sell them the fear of poverty.
Precisely. The phrase mistakes to avoid assumes the reader is already operating from a baseline of vulnerability.
Really? They're already messing up.
Yeah. It shifts their cognitive state from analytical to defensive. When the brain is processing a threat, the amygdala dictates the response.
It triggers the fight or flight response.
Exactly. And that often bypasses the prefrontal cortex, which is where your complex, long-term strategic planning actually occurs.
So you're not even thinking logically anymore.
Not at all. By framing the educational material as a survival guide against imminent mistakes, the author immediately places the reader in a reactive posture.
And here is where it gets really interesting. Because that reactive posture becomes a massive liability.
No, absolutely.
I mean, if you spend your entire time playing defense, you never advance the ball. It's like trying to learn how to ride a bike by reading a book called How Not to Crash Into a Tree.
That's a perfect analogy.
Right. Sure, avoiding the tree is great, but at some point, you actually have to learn how to pedal. Think about the physical mechanics of target fixation.
Oh, in motorsports, right.
Yeah, aviation and motorsports. It is a well-documented phenomenon. If a driver is skidding toward a wall and they lock their eyes on the wall in a panic, their hands will subconsciously steer the vehicle directly into the object they're trying to avoid.
Because they can't stop looking at it.
Exactly. The instruction, "Do not hit the wall," is completely overridden by the brain's hyper-focus on the wall itself.
That is a highly relevant cognitive model for this. In the context of our source material, the text demands that the investor fixate on the mistakes.
They're staring straight at the wall.
Even if the document had actually provided the promised excerpts, the structural focus remains on the negative outcome.
So they're almost guaranteed to make the mistake just by obsessing over it.
In a way, yes. In financial terms, this often manifests as cash drag.
Right, when people just hold cash because they're terrified.
Exactly. Holding excessive amounts of uninvested capital out of a fear of market downturns. The explicit attempt to avoid the mistake of a market correction ensures the absolute certainty of the mistake of inflationary erosion.
They guarantee a slow loss to avoid a fast one. The fear of doing the wrong thing prevents them from doing the necessary thing.
It creates complete paralysis.
But the unique cruelty of our source document today is that it induces the paralysis without even identifying the threat.
Which is the real kicker.
You are told to brace for impact, but you aren't told where the blow is coming from.
Which forces the investor into a state of generalized, undirected anxiety.
Just panicking about everything.
Right. And this raises a fundamental issue with how educational frameworks are constructed in this space.
How so?
Well, a title like The Biggest Investing Mistakes to Avoid positions the external authority, the author, as the sole possessor of the map through a minefield.
Oh, I see. They hold all the secrets.
It establishes a dynamic of dependency. The reader must rely on the author to identify where the traps are. But when the map is blank, like in our document, that dependency is exposed as a critical vulnerability.
The investor is left without any framework for independent risk assessment.
Yeah.
They don't know how to evaluate risk on their own.
Exactly.
I want to pause here and direct this to you listening right now. Consider your own heuristics for acquiring new skills or entering unfamiliar domains.
It's a really important question to ask yourself.
Do you initiate your research by searching for the foundational principles of operation? Or do you start by searching for the failure states?
Most people look for the failures first.
They do. How much of your analytical bandwidth is consumed by guarding against hypothetical pitfalls versus actively constructing a methodology for success?
Because this source material perfectly highlights that imbalance.
Yes. By triggering that defensive instinct and then abandoning you in a blank space, it effectively forces you to audit your own learning process.
It is a totally necessary audit. And the language of the text forces us to look not just at the concept of mistakes in general, but at the magnitude of those mistakes.
Right. The author makes a very specific linguistic choice there.
They do. The text does not just warn against investing mistakes. It warns against the biggest investing mistakes.
The biggest. The superlative.
Yes.
It implies a definitive ranking system, like there's a top 10 list of doom.
It implies a stripped hierarchy of risk. By using the word biggest, the text asserts a worldview where financial errors are not distributed evenly.
Some are worse than others.
Much worse. It suggests a categorical distinction between catastrophic, terminal errors and minor, frictional errors.
Okay, I follow.
The promise of the title is that by identifying and isolating the tail risk events, the biggest mistakes, the investor can safely secure their position.
So what does this all mean? I've jumped in and challenged that framing. Does focusing on the superlative actually serve the investor?
You don't think it does?
Well, by directing all our vigilance toward the biggest mistakes, you know, the spectacular movie-style portfolio incinerating blow-ups, do we inadvertently grant ourselves psychological permission to ignore the small, insidious ones?
That's a fair point. We overlook the everyday stuff.
Right. Because in any long-term system, failure is rarely a single dramatic explosion. What if the literal biggest mistake is not a categorical event, but actually just a continuous series of 1,000 tiny uncorrected habits?
I appreciate that pushback. Let's test your hypothesis against the mechanics of compounding, then.
Okay, let's do it.
You are arguing that frictional costs like a suboptimal fee structure, a slight delay in capital deployment, emotional micro-adjustments to a portfolio, that these compound over decades into a massive structural deficit.
Exactly. Death by 1,000 cuts.
And that is mathematically sound. However, I will defend the text's use of the superlative here.
Okay, defend away.
While frictional costs erode wealth, terminal risks eradicate it entirely.
Eradicate versus erode. Explain the distinction between erosion and eradication in this context, just so we're clear.
Okay. If you suffer from the friction of a poorly optimized portfolio, you may retire with, say, 20% less capital than you originally projected.
Which hurts, obviously.
It's a mistake, yes, but it is a survivable one. You still have 80%.
Wait.
Conversely, if you commit a terminal error, such as over-leveraging a highly concentrated position that goes to zero, or panicking and liquidating your entire portfolio at the exact bottom of a cyclical drawdown, you are removed from the game entirely.
You're wiped out.
You cannot compound to zero. Therefore, the title is logically sound in prioritizing the biggest mistakes because existential threats must be neutralized before frictional threats can even be managed.
Okay, that makes sense. So the distinction is really between a mistake that hurts you and a mistake that kills you.
Exactly.
The biggest mistake is the one that permanently removes your capacity to make future choices. But here's the problem with the source document we have today.
The blank page.
Yes. Because it provides absolutely no text, it never defines what constitutes that terminal risk. It just says biggest.
And the concept of magnitude remains entirely subjective.
Totally subjective.
Without the promised excerpts to anchor the definition, biggest just becomes a variable that the reader has to solve for themselves. And the way a reader solves that equation reveals their specific market vulnerabilities.
It is a Rorschach test for financial anxiety.
It really is.
You look at the blank space underneath the word biggest, and you see the monster you are uniquely afraid of.
Whatever keeps you up at night.
Exactly. If an aggressive, high-risk trader reads that title, their definition of the biggest mistake might be missing out on an asymmetrical growth opportunity.
They fear omission. FOMO.
Right. But if a highly conservative investor reads the exact same blank document, their definition of the biggest mistake is likely a catastrophic loss of principal.
They fear commission, making the wrong move.
The document seamlessly accommodates both anxieties because it commits to neither. It is a perfect mirror.
It proves that risk is not an objective constant in the market. It is a dynamic relationship between the market and the individual's specific temporal and psychological constraints.
Which brings us back to the ultimate irony of the repetition in the text. Excerpts from The Biggest Investing Mistakes to Avoid. The Biggest Investing Mistakes to Avoid.
The endless loop.
It states the thesis, and then instead of providing evidence, it simply restates the thesis. It is the rhetorical equivalent of saying, the rule is the rule.
It is a tautology.
A tautologist.
In logic, a tautology is a statement that is true by necessity or by virtue of its logical form, but it provides no new information.
Like saying, it is what it is.
Exactly. By reducing the entirety of its investing advice to a tautology, the document forces us to question the value of the advice itself. Are most financial warnings just complex tautologies?
Avoid losing money to avoid losing money.
Buy assets that go up so your portfolio goes up.
It's absurd when you distill it down like that. We strip away the jargon, the charts, and the endless commentary, and we are left with a fundamental emptiness.
The noise hides the lack of substance.
The industry generates millions of words a day, but how much of it is just this source document in disguise? How much of it is just a flashy headline promising the secret to avoiding pain? Followed by a body of text that ultimately boils down to stating the obvious.
That is the metacognitive takeaway here. The text strips away the illusion of complex proprietary knowledge.
There is no secret sauce.
When the curtain is pulled back, there are no secret excerpts. There is only the investor, their capital, and the inevitable necessity of making a decision in the face of uncertainty.
To synthesize the journey of this deep dive today, we started by confronting the pure absence of information.
We stared into the void.
We did. We recognized that a blank page promising a definitive answer exposes the dangers of ambiguity aversion and the pervasive habit of title surfing in our modern attention economy.
The dopamine hit of the headline.
Right. Then we analyzed the prescriptive framing of the word avoid, unpacking how negative framing triggers a defensive cognitive posture that can lead to target fixation and paralysis.
Staring at the wall instead of steering the car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We rigorously debated the superlative biggest, examining the critical difference between terminal risk that removes you from the market entirely and frictional risk that merely slows you down.
Eradication versus erosion.
And ultimately, we realized that without context, the biggest mistake is just a subjective reflection of the reader's own internal financial dread.
It's a powerful realization. For the listener focused on navigating complex information landscapes without succumbing to overload, The methodology we applied today is the primary lesson.
It's how you read between the lines, or in this case, read the blank lines.
Exactly. You do not always need to consume the data to understand the motive of the source. By critically evaluating the syntax, the framing, and the emotional leverage of a title, you can immunize yourself against the fear-based marketing that dominates so much of the educational ecosystem.
You learn to interrogate the promise of the text before you ever surrender your attention to the text itself.
It is about analyzing the architecture of the menu rather than just blindly consuming whatever is placed on the table.
That's a great way to look at it. We approached a document that was virtually silent, and by refusing to simply dismiss it as a printing error, we extracted a rigorous framework for understanding investor psychology.
The silence of the text was not an absence of meaning. It was the space where meaning had to be actively constructed by us.
So as you, listening right now, step away from this deep dive and back into the noise of the market, I want to leave you with one final lingering question to turn over in your mind.
Something to chew on.
If a source definitively promises to reveal the catastrophic mistakes you must avoid, but provides absolutely no instructions on how to do so, is the true test of an investor realizing that the only way to genuinely discover the boundaries of risk is by going out there and risking making the mistakes yourself?